Well, there's also the tendency, even when we have an intuition and we think it's an intuition, we're not confident enough to act upon it, right? Most probably, you've denied it as a fantasy and commenced in a logical way to fulfill your impulses, desired from previous patterns of experience, only to find that you would have traversed agonies and confusions had you followed the subtle impulse of direction, which was rejected to enhance established patterns of procedure. But I must add that the first impulse must have registered itself as cold and clear, direct and profound. Only if it did, would it have indelibly printed itself within your memory patterns clear and sharp, thus distinguishing itself clearly from all warm emotional feelings that appear to be reasonable and totally in line with the current pictures of the day. So has anyone ever had an intuition and dismissed it? What would you say the reason is you dismissed it?
Just didn't trust it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a good reason. Any other reasons?
The intellect purged it.
Just questioned it. Huh? Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, well, that's normal. So the idea is, it's there all the time. We can identify it, and if we get good at identifying it, then we can be confident enough to act upon it. But we need to be good at identifying it. We're not trying to just start acting on imaginations. That's not the point. And of course, if you're going to put your life savings up, you might want a second opinion. You know, if you think someone's at the door and they haven't knocked, you could open it, you know. You're not going to lose any money. Test it out. So test it out in ways that wouldn't cause a loss. Gurudeva then gives a key to increasing our ability to identify an intuition. Though we often use the terms unfolding intuitive faculties and developing intuition, they're only used in an effort to encourage the aspirant on the path to work within himself in subduing his intellect so that he can actually observe is the word, the already functioning totality of the intuitive area of the mind. In order to subdue the intellect, that conglomerate of thought patterns and established modes of procedure according to the culture of the day, which is a beautiful sentence, it is first quite necessary to inwardly observe how one's acquired intellect actually functions. Observation is a faculty of the intuitive area of the mind, and this particular aspect of observation that I have just described comes into usage only after regular periods of meditation have been maintained over a long period of time. True, our intuitive faculties do constantly mingle through thought sequences each day, but our ability to distinguish one from another is accrued only through regulated discipline of our individual power of awareness. Once an inkling of success comes in knowing intuition and how it differs from reasoning, emotional impulses, and pre-programmed patterns within the subconscious, the contest is won. Then and only then, we must persist to sustain this knowledge and dive deeper into the inevitable, all the time losing the future and the past and loosening the reins of the intellect. So what do you think Gurudeva means by losing the future and the past?
Being in the now.
Being in the now, yes. So why would we want to lose it?
So your awareness can flow?
Yes. In other words, our thoughts of the past and the future aren't particularly valuable. You know, they're kind of just ramblings. They have no particular meaning. We're not creating a future plan that's, you know, our family's depending on or something. We're just kind of rambling. And most of our thoughts of past and future are kind of rambling. They're not super important. So those are the ones we want to lose. We don't want to think about the past and the future unnecessarily.
How can we cultivate observation? How can we increase my mind?
Probably by replacing the batteries.
Okay, so your question. can observation be cultivated? Anybody remember? Yes, abstinence from excessive talk. Observation is the first faculty of the awakening of the superconscious region. This observation is cultivated by abstinence from excessive talk. Self-explanatory.
Takes the observation of our creations to bring us to the point where we can reconcile them, the thoughts and desires that created them. Here's another one. Excessive talk overloads the subconscious mind, thus making it extremely difficult for the superconscious to express itself. You know what it is to have a basement full of things you have no use for. This basement may easily be compared to your subconscious mind. Thoughts and words can be compared to things. If in your basement, it's designed for cold weather. Houses used to all have basements in cold weather. So. If in your basement you have a furnace that supplies heat to the entire house, your furnace can be compared to your superconscious mind. If your basement is too congested, you may not be able to get to the furnace to light it and heat your home. So it is within the storehouse of your subconscious mind. Silence lends itself to understanding. It allows you to perceive, then cognize, for is it not true that we talk excessively in an effort to understand what we are talking about? Whoops.
That's very true for women, who tend to process by talking.
Yes, well, there's nothing wrong with talking. You know, it's the excess that, talk that's not really producing anything meaningful. Talk is part of being a social person, interrelating with other people. We don't want to stop talking, but sometimes we just go on and on and on. Which, again, we're not saying you shouldn't do that, but we're saying if you want to cultivate the ability to find your intuition, then it's recommended you don't. If you don't want to cultivate that ability, then keep on talking a lot. Okay, I have a Yogaswami story. Yogaswami worked intuitively. This is from we're working on the biography of the line of gurus, in case some of you don't know. It's coming along very well. I mentioned it, was that this morning or yesterday? Morning. So we started in 1972 and we picked it up again in 2009. And hopefully it'll be edited this year and then we can print it next year. It's a fairly big book. Particularly the sections on Yogaswami and Gurudeva are long. So this comes from the Yogaswami section. There's lots of wonderful stories in there, it's a PDF file so I can just search on certain things that I remember and find the stories. Sticking in my talk, so it's a great resource already. In explaining this process, he once said, "I do nothing. I can do nothing. Everything you see, that is done by what comes from within." Another time he said, "When you come here, what will happen was settled long ago. We go through it, you bring it, but it all happened long ago. Sit and be a witness." He advised, "Boldly act when you receive orders from within. You need not wait until all details are in order. If you wait for everything to be worked out, you may miss your chance. Have faith and do the work that comes from within. Money will trail after you if you are responding to divine orders. Helpers will come. Everything will come. You have only to follow carefully that which comes from within." So Gurudeva did that a lot. When he was really confident in something, he'd move ahead, even though the infrastructure wasn't there to make it succeed. You'd have to create it. You know, he's stepping in the air, so to speak. You'd have to create something to land on before his foot went down. Anyone had something like that happen in their life or other person's life that you know about? Or had an inner inspiration and it worked out? and they moved ahead in a project of some kind, tangible way. Okay, well, something to look forward to. When asked how to find one's inner voice, he said, "Suma iru, be still." Sound familiar? Sure sounds like abstinence from excessive talk to me. Be still, and what you need will come to you. Suma iru was his constant command. He practiced it and heeded the answers that came. Someone would ask him a question and he would wait to feel his inner orders. If he felt no orders, he would do nothing until orders came. Once a man drove up to Swami as he was walking through town and asked if he could drive him anywhere.
"No orders," Swami replied and waved the man on. A few minutes later, the driver came by and stopped again. "Now I have my orders," Swami said. So, Guru Devas and Yogi Swami's advice on how to find one's intuition is the same, just the wording is different. Guru Deva, abstinence from excessive talk. Yogi Swami, be still. Suma iru. Give it a try, the results. So then there's an exercise here. In tapping intuition, there's two ways to tap intuition. One is as a time delay. So this is the time delay method.
Your pardon? Yes, there it is. Okay. The time delay method, which is in technical terms is called sub-superconscious, whereas the immediacy is called superconscious. Immediacy is hard to generate on your own initiative. It's easier to be passive to it initially, so you become aware of something, but it might have nothing to do with anything you're thinking about. Whereas the time delay, you're asking for an answer to a question that you have an interest in, so it has something to do with what you're thinking about. At night, just before going to sleep, write down the problem or question you're trying to solve. Make sure you have described it accurately and completely. If not, then rewrite it until you have achieved accuracy and completeness. Go to sleep with the expectation that the answer will come to you from your intuition in the morning soon after arising. So it actually works. You know, it won't work all the time, but it works. It's very interesting, particularly if we have a deep sleep. Why does it work? Well, the question, the subconscious mind just loves to chew on something. So here we, instead of chewing on a worry, something that we really is negative, we've given it something positive to work on. So it's another example, that's back, maybe something's loose.
It could be the two betters are good, it says to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's a little distracting, but anyone can hear me even without it. So. Yes?
When we have a problem, we can't sleep well, so what happens?
Well, this isn't an emotional problem. If you're disturbed by something, then you need to wait till you get undisturbed. I'd say if it's an emotional problem, this won't work. You have to be calm for this to work. So you have to wait maybe a day or two to calm down. This is generally more an intellectual problem. Should I do this or this? It's not clear to you. You have some options. Yes.
This is where Gurudeva said that if you're disturbed, you should not go to bed in the first place.
Well, yes, if you're disturbed through interaction with another person, and that person is there to discuss the interaction, it's good to discuss it, yes. Don't go to bed with unresolved arguments, particularly spouses, is his advice. Because over the years, it piles up. Unresolved arguments causes problems. Another example to try and illustrate the principle is you're trying to solve some kind of financial problem or a problem, a chemical problem, something that's scientific or mathematical or involves accounting. And, you know, the solution, it's not an unknown solution. It's findable. You're not looking for new knowledge, but you can't solve it. And you work at it for half an hour and you just can't see it. So, utilizing this approach, what do? You take a break. Go have some coffee, tea. Go for a walk. Jump on the exercise bike for a few minutes. Come back and look at it. And the answer may jump right out at you. So, it's another way of utilizing this process. Why didn't you see it in the first place? Because you got too externalized. You got too tense. You cut off your own intuitive faculty by getting frustrated with yourself. And so you had to let that frustration go, let that tension go. And then you come back to the problem and you can't believe that you couldn't see the answer. So same idea. You're using intuition with a delay.